Shalom. Welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Shlomo, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, how would you feel if there were elections in Israel for the Knesset again in another year or two, and we ran for the Knesset, we ran our own party, our own slate of candidates for the Knesset? Wouldn't that be great? I want to discuss something that we would like to put together. Again, this is something that may not happen. There's a real chance it may not happen, and I'll explain to you why, and you'll understand why in a moment. But if we could, we would want to run a slate and run a party in the upcoming elections. First of all, let me explain that although, according to Israeli law, an Israeli government can remain in power, each Israeli government can remain in power for 4 years before there are new elections, so you can have elections once every 4 years. Because Israel has a parliamentary system, you can have elections a lot sooner than every 4 years. Because if the government loses its Knesset majority, the Knesset is the Israeli parliament, if the government loses its Knesset majority, the government falls and there are new elections. So you can have new elections in a year. And there were times in Israeli history when governments lasted only 1 year. And we have a very fragile majority being assembled now for this new government because the Likud party of Benjamin Netanyahu got only 31 seats out of 120. So he needs to get a lot of parties that have major, tremendous differences between them. He has to get a lot of parties together to agree to join his coalition in order to have a government and in order to maintain a government. And already some of them are threatening new elections and saying we'll have new elections in a year if we don't get our demands. All of our demands are not met. So there's a real possibility here. There's a real possibility that this government will not last the full 4 years, that this government will fall and that you'll have new elections in a year or 2 years or 3 years. There's a real possibility. You could have new elections in as little as a year. Now, having said that, so let's understand that there's a real possibility that new elections can be upon us a lot faster than is the usual case. There is someone in Israeli politics now, before we get to what we want to do, how we would like to run in the Knesset elections, before we get to that exciting idea that we have, there is someone who is rising very fast in Israeli politics, and his name is Yair Lapid. He is a very evil, anti-religious leftist, a very dangerous person. Many women, unfortunately, consider him to be attractive, and so he gets votes from people who want to vote for a candidate that they think is attractive. He has a party called Yesh Atid, which means there is a future. He already came in second place in this past election that was held last month. His party got 19 seats. The Likud got 31 seats. His party, Yesh Atid, got 19 seats. So his party already came in second place in the election. And according to polls that have been taken after the election, if there were new elections, this time he would come in first place. This time he would be elected prime minister, God forbid. So Yair Lapid and his party, Yesh Atid, there is, which means again in Hebrew, there is a future, this is a very dangerous phenomenon. He has become very popular very quickly. He's being promoted by the left-wing news media. He himself was involved with the left-wing news media. And there's a real possibility that he may eventually become prime minister of Israel, God forbid. To understand how dangerous this is, his father, Tommy Lapid, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem Reshaim Yirkav, may the memory of this evil person be obliterated. Tommy Lapid ran a party, a different party, that ran solely on the basis of being against the Torah and being against Torah Judaism. He claimed that secular people are being oppressed by religious Jews and Bible-believing Jews in Israel, and that we have to have an end to this nonsense, and we have to have practical secular people involved. He ran against the Torah. He ran against Judaism, in effect. And now his son, he thankfully is now in a very warm place. God thankfully took him away from us. Now his son, Yair Lapid, who is much more attractive than him and more charismatic than him, is running. And there's a real danger that Yair Lapid in the next election can become prime minister. If he does, the danger of creating a Palestine state and doing all types of suicidal, insane things becomes even more profound. So we have some real, real threats on the horizon that we have to deal with. Now, if there is another election, because Yair Lapid is already threatening, if Netanyahu doesn't give in to our demands, we're going to call a new election in another year or another year and a half. We're going to bring down the government, and we're going to make sure he doesn't have a Knesset majority, because Netanyahu basically needs Yair Lapid to form his government now, needs his 19 Knesset seats. And so Yair Lapid probably will have the ability to bring down the government and force new elections, and he's already threatening to do so. So there's a possibility that there could be new elections a lot sooner. There's also an even more dangerous possibility that Netanyahu, to avoid new elections, will give in completely to Yair Lapid and will agree to do all of the insane things that Yair Lapid wants to do. He basically wants to strip Israel of any Jewish identity and wants to make Israel a secular state, a secular Western state without Jewish identity and without Judaism, without Jewish values. I mean, Israel doesn't have many Jewish values right now, but to completely strip it of all Jewish values, that would be a terrible sin and could bring upon terrible divine punishment on the Jewish people, God forbid. So this is very dangerous, and aside from the fact that Yair Lapid wants a Palestine state to be created, even though there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, it's all a lie and a bluff and a myth, he wants to agree to the plans that the Obama administration have come up with for Israeli national suicide, God forbid. So he's very, very dangerous in every respect. Now, we're going to be doing all types of things, of course, to try to wake the people of Israel up, to try to bring about resistance to this, to try to encourage the Jews in Judea and Samaria to resist any expulsions or any plan for expulsions. So we're going to do everything we can to try to prevent any of this from happening. We're going to continue our campaign of trying to wake the people of Israel up. But in addition to that, if there are new elections, our real goal, if there are new elections, would be to eventually run our own party and our own candidates in the election. We have some good people in Israel. We have a movement in Israel. And we'd like to be able to run in the next election if possible. The problem is we don't have money. We don't have enough money. I mean, this is our chronic problem. Let me explain to you how funding for Israeli elections work and what would ideally happen for us. If we could find a multimillionaire who is willing to risk putting up hundreds of thousands of dollars, $500,000 or $1 million or hundreds of thousands of dollars, if he's willing to risk putting that up, he may not lose any of it. He may keep every penny, or he may lose all of the money. Let me explain what I mean. Under Israeli law, the Israeli government subsidizes the elections for people who are in the Knesset. And for parties that are not in the Knesset, which would be us, if you don't have Knesset members and you're a new party running, which is us, the Israeli government also has a subsidy plan. They will pay for our Knesset expenses. Let's say we had $500,000. We put up $500,000, which would be like, I don't know, 1.3, 1.4 million shekels. So it's the equivalent of about $500,000. Let's say we had a budget like that. If we had a budget like that, we would run. We would run a slate of candidates in the Knesset elections. Now, if we have someone who would be willing to put up $500,000, here's how it would work. The Israeli government will give us $500,000. They will pay for our election campaign, for our budget. They will fund our campaign. But there's a condition there. We have to have a bank guarantee, a real solid legal bank guarantee, that $500,000 will be repaid to the Israeli government if we lose. If we lose, then the person who's putting up $500,000 will lose the entire $500,000. That's how it works. But if we win, if we get elected, then the person that's putting up the guarantee for the $500,000 doesn't pay a penny. The Israeli government pays. If you get elected and you get Knesset seats, the Israeli government pays for your election, finances your election. That's Israeli law. So we would need somebody who would be willing to risk a $500,000 on our campaign, or hundreds of thousands of dollars, or if they'd be willing to risk even more, if they'd be willing to risk $1 million, it'd be even better. That would increase our chances. They would have to be willing to risk the money on the understanding that if we get in, if we get elected, they will not have to pay a penny. It will not cost them one penny. But if we lose, they'll lose whatever they put up. Whatever they put up, they will lose, because they have to. We would have to transfer that money over to the Israeli government, because the Israeli government will have paid for our election campaign, and so we will have to refund the Israeli government if we lose. So it would be a gamble. Now, can I guarantee that if we have this type of money, if we have a $500,000 or $1 million or hundreds of thousands of dollars, can I guarantee that we're going to win and that it won't cost you a penny? No, I cannot guarantee that. First of all, I'm not a prophet, and I don't know what's going to be, and I can't guarantee that the people of Israel will elect us. I can't. I don't know what's going to happen in a campaign with all of the things that happen in campaigns. There are all types of possibilities. So I could not guarantee it. There's a real possibility. I think there's a real possibility that we would get elected and that it wouldn't cost the person putting up the money a single penny. But I also think that there's a real possibility that we would be unable to get elected because we're running against other parties that have much more money and media and everything else. I think our message is a message that is a good message that will appeal to the people of Israel, but I can't guarantee that we would get elected. There's a real possibility we wouldn't get elected, and so the person putting up the money would lose the $500,000 or whatever the person would be putting up. But that's how it works. If we could get somebody or a group of people who together will put up a $500,000, we will run, God willing, we'll be able to put together a slate and run in the next election. Now, it's true that I'm still in the United States. I'm not allowed to go to Israel. I'm still in this situation here. But, of course, I can assist from the United States with videos and with messages and everything else, and our people can run. And if they get in the Knesset, they can fight to get me into Israel. And I do think if our people got into the Knesset, I do think I would get into Israel. If we had a party that got elected to the Knesset, and I was the chairman of that party, I'm almost certain that at that point I would be allowed to make Aliyah. Because if we have a legally elected party that gets into the Knesset and is running in the Knesset and has been accepted as for Knesset representation, and the head of the party is not even allowed to make Aliyah, I think I'm almost sure, and I've checked with a couple of people who are who have some expertise on this, and they agreed with me that at that point they think that I would be allowed to make Aliyah. This would get me into Israel. But it involves a big risk. We need somebody who's wealthy enough and has enough financial security that he could risk hundreds of thousands of dollars or $500,000 or a large sum of money that he can actually take this risk. We need somebody who's in a position to take a risk like this. Understanding again that if we lose, the person putting up the money loses every penny. If we win, God willing, then the person putting up the money does not have to pay a penny. First of all, the Israeli government is going to actually be financing the campaign. So the money, I don't know exactly how it works. I don't know if the money's put in escrow. I don't know exactly how it works. But not a single penny will be taken from the person putting up the money if we win. If we get elected, then our campaign has been financed by the Israeli government, and that means that there is no expense from our end. And the person who put up the bank guarantee, because all the person's really putting up is a bank guarantee, in effect, putting up the money and with a bank guarantee that the money will be transferred to Israel if we lose, that bank guarantee will no longer be relevant, and the Israeli government will have paid for the election if we get in, if we get Knesset representation. If we don't get Knesset representation, if we're unable to do that, then of course the person loses everything. So that's the situation that we're in. And, you know, I really wish somehow we could find people who were wealthy enough to put up $1 million or $500,000 or at least a major portion of it and put piece together enough financial support so that we could actually run and do this. That would be great. That would be absolutely great and would give us a chance at finally having voices of truth in the Israeli Knesset. That would be tremendous. If we had voices of truth in the Israeli Knesset, I really, truly believe that we would change Jewish history. I really believe that. Because what we say, first of all, I believe it will resonate. Secondly, I think we'll move the whole Israeli public to the right and everybody to the right, just as Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, did when he was in the Knesset. Because what we're saying makes sense. What we're saying is so logical. And it'll be so refreshing to have idealistic people. Of course, they're going to say we're unrealistic, we're idealistic, we're fanatics, we're racists, we're this, we're that. They're going to say all of that. Is there a possibility, incidentally, that if we try to run a party that it'll be banned? Yeah, there's a possibility of that as well. There's a possibility they won't let us run. That's possible. That's possible. I think we probably could get past that because we're going to do it according to their rules and according to the Supreme Court rulings. But is there a possibility that despite the fact that we do it even according to their own rules and their own Supreme Court ruling, that they still are so unfair that they would still ban us? It's possible. If that happens, by the way, then the person putting up the money or the people putting up the money lose nothing. Then they lose nothing. Because nothing's going to be, because if we don't run, nothing's going to be transferred to the Israeli government. The only way the people putting up the money would lose something is if we actually run and we lose the election. Then after the election, the money has to be transferred to the Israeli government. That's how it works. And we can't play games. If anybody's thinking, we'll promise to transfer the money and then we won't transfer the money. No, you can't. I don't know exactly how it is, but it's going to be a situation where the money will be put either in a special account or something will happen where there will not be the possibility of playing games with the Israeli government. We have to actually follow the law in this case. If we lose, we got to pay, God forbid, and if we win, God willing, then we don't have to pay. But anyway, so is this going to happen? Is this dream going to come true? Are we going to be able to do this? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if we'll be able to get enough money together, enough people together. Of course, there's a real chance that we won't be able to do it. And so we'll keep striving. If we can't, then we just keep fighting and striving until we reach the point where we have enough support to do this. But eventually, I believe that we will be able to do this. Eventually, I believe the day will come when we will be able to do this, God willing. If it'll happen in the next election, that's something I don't know. By the way, you know, our video against Barack Hussein Obama, the best anti-Obama video on the internet, it's called, or the best anti-Obama video ever made, already has 100,000 views. What a great video that was. And we have other videos with tens of thousands of views. Our video, on how Romney really won the election because of election fraud, that has tens of thousands of views. I mean, we've got other videos up there with large numbers of views, with tens of thousands of views. So we're definitely, I'm mentioning this in English so that those of you that don't speak Hebrew, so that you know that we do run things professionally. I mean, we have a persuasive message, we have good videos. We put things together very well. Did you see the latest video that we put up about Google and Facebook and how they spy on people and how they steal people's information and how they sell people's information and the danger of not being careful when you go on Facebook and Google, why you have to be careful with all of these companies? Did you see our latest video? I mean, that was just a fantastic video. It was so professional. It was so well done. And it's an example of the type of professionalism. It's an example of the type of persuasive arguments that we can make in English and in Hebrew, and why our movement, if only we had proper financing, could take off and could be the fulfillment of the dream that Rabbi Kahana had. We could do it, possibly. I'm convinced we could do it if we had the funds. And by the way, I'm not saying that if we had $500,000 in my hand now to do this, that we would win this election. I'm not saying this election, it's possible we wouldn't win the first time. That's possible. But if we had real money on a regular basis, I'm convinced that in the end, we would accomplish great things and would change Jewish history. I'm convinced of it, that we could save the Jewish people. I'm convinced of it. And so I'm going to ask our people again what I ask them to do every week. I'm going to ask you to help us with our videos. When you see me put up videos, when you see me post threads, usually in the sticky thread section of the general discussion section, when you see me post videos, if they're in Hebrew or in English, please help us promote those videos. Please help us do that. Please like, favorite, comment, mirror, share, do all the other little things that you can do to promote videos both on Facebook and on YouTube. On YouTube and on Facebook. Help us with this. Please help us with these videos. Whether they're in English or in Hebrew, and I know most of the people on our English forum don't speak Hebrew, but even if you don't speak Hebrew, you know what we're doing is important. Help us. You can help our movement in Israel as well by helping to promote the Hebrew videos. So please help us with our video campaign. Secondly, please help us with the JTF forum and with our two English language JTF Facebook pages. We have the Romney Ryan campaign page that we never, you know, unfortunately, they won't let us change the name because of stupid Facebook rules. So it's still called Romney Ryan. But we also have the JTF. We have a JTF Facebook page. Help us on our Facebook pages. Help us on our forum. Post interesting and inviting messages so that people will become active and so that we can get people involved. The more people get involved, the bigger we become, the better chance we have of reaching and achieving our goals. And by the way, people, you know, something I haven't mentioned really on the forum that much, even though I think people are familiar with it. I have my own personal Facebook page as well with over 1,000 likes, which isn't that much, but, you know, I don't try to get likes, but I have them. People come to me. It's Chaim Ben Pesach. It's in Hebrew. My name is spelled in Hebrew, Chaim Ben Pesach. But it's my Facebook page. If people want to join my personal Facebook page, you're all invited to like and participate in my personal Facebook page as well. That's also great. So let's promote all of this. Let's push all of this forward, because we have a lot of things that we want to accomplish, and Israel really is in grave danger right now. And of course, most importantly, we need financial support. I think that you see from this message how important the financial support is. Even if you can't afford to put up $500,000 or risk $500,000 or $1 million or something like, or some money like that, or a major part of that, help us as best you can. And great JTFers are doing that by going on a regular basis to our main page, jtf.org, where you have a donate button on top, and they click on the donate button and they help us. You can also go to the Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. There's a donate button there as well. Please help us. It's very easy, very convenient with your credit card. It takes just a few minutes with your credit card, and you can help us financially so that this will give us a boost. Every time you support us and contribute to us, it gives us another boost so we can spread our message more and so we can get closer to our goal of doing what we want to do. If we ever run for the Knesset with a well-financed campaign and get into the Knesset, God willing, then we are on our way. Then we become a mass movement. Then we're going to shoot up like a rocket in terms of people knowing about us and what we could do and achieve. I believe we'll become a mass movement very quickly if that happens. So that would be our dream. Also, some people like to help us with credit cards. Other people like through the regular mail to send checks, money orders, cash donations to our post office box. Vitally important, especially now, vitally important. We've got to build our movement up because we've got to confront these new dangers that we have with Yair Lapid and this new terrible government and all the dangers. We've got to confront all these new dangers. And we're also doing important things in America. Look at the messages we've had some great videos in America on abortion, on the Second Amendment, on immigration. We're raising very important issues in America. And if we become a mass movement in Israel, if in Israel we become a mass movement, I'm telling you, I believe we'll become a mass movement in America as well. So we'll be able to do great things for America as well. I really believe that. And so in that case, we could do things that will be very important and beneficial for America and for all of Western civilization. So please help us financially. I thank the wonderful JTFers that are doing that. We have a real game plan in place, ready to go, if only we had enough money. And in order to get to that, we need your financial support. We need your help. Everybody, help as much as you can. Help as much as you can, because this is a critical time. God will bless you for it. And I really, really pray that God bless all the wonderful JTFers, you and your family in this world and the next world. God bless the wonderful JTFers who've been helping us, who've been sending us generous contributions, and who've been helping us with our videos. God bless you. Okay, so I think we have some exciting plans, at least on the horizon. Hopefully, they'll come to fruition in time to save Israel and the Jewish people, and also to do good things for America and the West and the Western world. Now, let's go to our great questions from our great JTFers, something which I always love to do. I'm sorry that I took up so much time here, but I thought that this was an important message. And we start out with the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "Arik Sharon is showing signs of consciousness, your comments," unquote. Well, it just shows that he may be in physical pain, and who knows what he's going through right now. God is punishing this evil man for all the terrible things he's done to the Jewish people. The expulsion of 10,000 Jews from Gush Katif, the handing over of the entire Sinai to Egypt, which he played a major role in that. He played a major role in the expulsion of the Jews from Yamit. 3,000 Jews were expelled from Yamit in the Sinai. Then he expelled the Jews from Gush Katif and handed over all of the Gaza district to the Muslim Nazi terrorists of Hamas. I mean, he was just an evil, rotten, corrupt beast. And Hashem is punishing him. Hashem is punishing him. And this is, I'm convinced that this is just a taste of what he's going to get eternally in the next world for all the terrible, terrible, horrible tragedies that he has brought upon the Jewish people because of his cruel, evil, corrupt life that he and his family have led and that created so many tragedies for the Jewish people. Dr. Dan now writes, and I quote, "Also, name one good thing the ACLU has done. Your comments on them too," unquote. I don't think there is anything good that the ACLU has done. I think it is an evil organization in every respect. Did you know that the ACLU supports pedophilia? Yes, they think all laws on pedophilia should be eliminated. They think it's perfectly fine for adults to molest little children. They don't think there's anything wrong with it. They think laws on pedophilia are an unfair restriction on someone's liberty to commit atrocious, perverse acts on children. I mean, what a disgusting, evil, monstrous organization this is. There is nothing good the ACLU has done. It is pure evil. Pure evil. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to the great ex-Muslim, whom we're happy to see on our forum. Welcome, ex-Muslim, to our forum. Ex-Muslim writes, and I quote, "Why doesn't the Jewish Task Force create a Wikipedia page? I think it could go a long way in terms of publicity," unquote. I think if ex-Muslim, if you and other JTFers want to create a page, you can do so. You know, you can sign on and do so. Wikipedia does not like when the organization itself creates a page about itself, even though a lot of people do that. They prefer if it's supposedly objective and impartial. But If you want to create a page, that's fine. Wikipedia is very biased against us. Very biased against us. The Wikipedia, they do have something about me. I haven't even looked at it in years, but they have something about me on Wikipedia, and it's extremely biased. And again, I haven't looked at the latest. I haven't seen it in a long time in years, but I know that for years, it was really, really filled with lies. So Wikipedia is very biased against us, and they won't let you put the truth up. So that may be one of the reasons why people don't want to create a JTF page. But if people want to create a page for JTF, I don't know if Wikipedia will even allow it. You know, they have, I don't even know if they'll allow you to create a page, but you can try. You can try to put up a page that's favorable to us. It has to look relatively objective, but, you know, make it look somewhat objective, but make it favorable to us. And I think it's, I don't think it's a bad idea if someone wants to try. Anyway, thank you, ex-Muslim. And now we go to Waiting for the Mother Plane to Come. By the way, if people are wondering what is Waiting for the Mother Plane to Come, that's Louis Farrakhan, Yimach Shmo, the Black Hitler, said that there's a mother plane. I think that's what is being referred to here. The mother plane that's going to suck up the entire white race. I think that's what waiting is referring to here. Anyway, Waiting writes now, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, Shvartza History Month be upon us. Mm-hmm. Please talk about Jesse Jackson Jr. and his mental illness. Thanks, unquote. Jesse Jackson Jr. is facing corruption charges because he was involved in all types of corrupt practices. He's a crook, just like his evil father was a crook, just like Barack Hussein Obama is a crook, just like Al Sharpton is a crook. They're all thieves and tax evaders and extortionists, all of them, all corrupt. And he is facing charges. He's facing serious criminal charges and facing the possibility of prison time. So he's been pretending that he has a mental illness in order to avoid the charges. This is all an act. It's all just complete an act. He's bipolar. Please. I mean, this is an act, in my opinion. Even if he does have these problems, it doesn't excuse his evil behavior. He and his father are black Nazis who are committed to the destruction of whites and of Jews and of America. But right now, I mean, as bad as they are, right now, that's nothing compared to what we have in the White House. We have someone in the White House now who agrees with them. Anyway, thank you, Waiting for the Mother Plane to Come. And now we go to the great Say No to Islam, who writes, and I quote, based on true story, Hollywood Gentile actor, married Holocaust survivor, converted to Islam, had a son who became a woman in his 30s. Your thoughts, unquote? Well, I don't know who you're referring to, but obviously it's a very, very sick story. I mean, you can't get any sicker than this. I mean, of course, we're against intermarriage because the Bible prohibits intermarriage. The Torah prohibits intermarriage. And the Holocaust survivors who intermarry, that's really a disgrace after what happened in the Holocaust. They still didn't learn their lesson. And, you know, the whole story is just unbelievably sick, unbelievably crazy. You know, if this is what happened, but in Hollywood, nothing would surprise me. Anyway, thank you very much, Say No to Islam. And now we go to the fantastic Yimach Shmo to Obama, who writes, and I quote, how is science viewed in the Muslim world, unquote. The Muslim world hates science. They hate knowledge. They're against knowledge. Judaism, by the way, is not against science. In fact, the Torah is, of course, religious faith, but true science confirms what the Torah teaches us. Judaism is not at all against science. And you have religious Jews who become great scientists, who become some of the greatest scientists. But Muslims fear knowledge because they're lazy and they don't learn and they're uneducated, and so they don't have very intelligent scientists. The Muslim world doesn't produce that. They have 1.5 billion Muslims. What in the world do they produce other than terrorism, genocide, drug smuggling, and all the other terrible things that are going on? So, of course, they despise science. I thank you, Yimach Shmo to Obama. And now we go to the magnificent EB22, who writes, and I quote, only 3 senators voted against confirming John Kerry as Secretary of State. Please provide your opinion on them, Ted Cruz, John Cornyn, James Inhofe, unquote. Okay, unfortunately, John Kerry is Secretary of State. The first thing he did is call up Netanyahu and and call up the PLO terrorist, Nazi mass murderer, Mahmoud Abbas, Yimach Shmo, right away to start pushing for Israeli national suicide, for a plan for Israeli national suicide. John Kerry, you know, his father's real name was Cohen. So he had a Jewish father who hid the fact that he was Jewish, an unbelievable self-hating Jew. And so he, of course, he's a vicious, vicious anti-Semite. He will do everything he can to destroy Israel, a terrible anti-Semite. The three senators who voted against him, Ted Cruz is the new senator, newly elected senator from the state of Texas. He ran as a candidate with the support of the Tea Party. I like a lot of what he says, but I don't know enough about him to know if he's sincere, and I don't know, time will tell. A lot of what he says, I like a lot of what he says, but time will tell and see if he's really sincere. John Cornyn is the other senator from Texas. He's a phony. He's an establishment phony. He has supported some of the most phony left-wing Republicans. He's an establishment phony, even though I'm glad that he voted against Kerry, but he's not sincere. James Inhofe is a senator from Oklahoma. Senator Inhofe, I don't know a whole lot about everything that he's done as a senator. I think he's voted for big spending. I think he's a big spender, which of course I'm not happy about. But I know that he's very pro-Israel. He made a speech on the Senate floor that was really pro-Israel, really saying there is no Palestine, there are no Palestinians, and the Arabs just want to destroy Israel. A speech that, by the way, you never hear in the Israeli Knesset. Unless we get elected to the Israeli Knesset, you'll never hear anybody say that in the Israeli Knesset. But James Inhofe said it a Gentile senator from Oklahoma, said it on the floor of the United States Senate. So I certainly liked what he said about Israel. Anyway, thank you, EB22. And now we go to the great Selhar, who, of course, is very active on both the English and the Hebrew forums. Selhar writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, is Cornel West one of the three smartest people alive?" Unquote. No, actually, I think he's one of the three dumbest people alive. He is an affirmative action moron. The only way he got anywhere in life is from sick, cowardly, self-hating whites and self-hating Jews promoting black people solely because of the color of their skin. And I'm not against there are genuinely brilliant black people like Pastor Manning and Alan West. I mean, you have some genuinely brilliant black people. There are black people who are really intelligent and who are good people. I don't know if West, I think his name is Alan West. I'm not sure. I think his name is Alan. Wait, let me. I don't have to check now. But I mean, you have some genuinely good, intelligent black people. But there's also this phenomenon of promoting people just because of the color of their skin, and Cornel West is an example of that, and he is exceptionally stupid. Anyway, thank you very much, Selhar. And now we go to Super Mentalita, who is relatively new to the forum. Welcome to our forum. Super Mentalita writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim. I hope you'll tell people more about European big cities and about the Muslim pedophile grooming gangs in it," unquote. Well, you know, European big cities are being taken over by Muslims. Tens of millions of Muslims are now living in Europe. They're invading Europe and they're taking over. And you have many big cities in Europe where entire neighborhoods are Muslim. Where if you're not a Muslim, it's actually dangerous to walk in the neighborhood. They control huge sections of major European cities. And it's growing and growing and growing. As far as pedophilia, of course, pedophilia is extremely common among Muslims because the founder of Islam, Muhammad, was a pedophile. Muhammad was in his 50s when he married Aisha. Aisha was only 6 years old. It describes in the Hadith how Muhammad was aroused by Aisha when she was only 3 years old. When she was 3 years old, she used to sit on his lap and it aroused the Prophet. And then when he was 6 years old, and then when she was 6 years old, he married her. And the hadith says when she was 8 years old, that they had sexual relations. In other words, he had sexual relations with an, he married a 6 year old girl and had sexual relations with an 8 year old girl when he was in his 50s. That's the founder of their religion. Can you imagine what a sick, demented religion this is? I mean, this is, this entire, if you read the Quran, you read the hadith, this is the product of a demented mind, of demented, sick people. And 1.5 billion people adhere to this. And they're flooding into Europe. And they're starting to take over European countries that have nuclear capacity, that have great technology. Very, very dangerous for the whole world. Very, very dangerous for the whole world, what's going on. Anyway, thank you, Super Mentalita. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Anyway, thank you for your question. And now we go to the fantastic Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Do you hold Hebrew National to be kosher? Do you purchase and use their products? What was the controversy with them about?" Unquote. No, Hebrew National is not kosher, and it's a disgrace that they use the word kosher on their products. They've never been kosher. They're not kosher. What they used to do is they used to give their own hechsher. When a product is supposed to be kosher, especially meat, it has to have what's called a hechsher. Hechsher means the kosher certification. And you see on it the OU, or you see on it the other symbols that indicate that it's kosher. That's a kosher certification. What Hebrew National did is they used their own in-house so-called certification, which you can't do. That's not really kosher. They'd have their own in-house guy claiming to certify that their products are kosher, which is nonsense. Not only that, they openly admitted that they had a whole line of products that were non-kosher. Their non-kosher division was known as National Deli. National Deli sold non-kosher products. They admitted that they sold non-kosher products. So they're selling non-kosher products. They have their own in-house so-called kosher certification. I mean, come on, what type of farce is this? They also, I mean, they're not glot kosher, which is also another issue. Glot means that the animal has smooth lungs. They check the lungs of the animal to make sure the lungs are smooth, to make sure the animal is healthier. That's called glot kosher. The vast majority of Orthodox Jews today, of religious Jews today, only eat glot kosher, are not going to eat something that isn't glot kosher. But it is possible, technically, to eat meat if someone doesn't hold by glot kosher, if someone wants a lower standard. It is possible to have meat that is not glot, but that still technically is kosher. They're not glot, that's for sure. They admit that they're not glot. But that's not the main issue. The main issue is the fact that their certification was always a farce. Now they claim to also have outside certification. They can't be trusted. They do things that are clearly against the rules for kashrut. And so they are not kosher. And the fact that they've been able to get away with this and been able to stamp kosher on their products is really consumer fraud. Anyway, thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, Yossi Klein Halevi was once a Kahanist. He gradually abandoned Torah and Zionism. Did you know him in the JDL? What happened to him?" Unquote. Yes, I knew him in the JDL. He wasn't in JDL for long, by the way. He was only in the early days when I first joined, 1970, 71. I joined in 71. But he was in JDL not for a long time. He quit pretty quickly. By 1972, when I was 15 years old, he was already out. He saw that the left controls the news media. He saw that the left has the money. And so when he went to Israel, he wanted to say, "I was once a Kahanist and I was once in JDL, but I learned my lesson and now I realize how wrong I was. And now I realize that we have to be leftists." Now, there's a lot of money to be made when somebody does something treasonous like that if they know what they're doing. And so he, realizing that, decided to play that little game so that he could cash in. there's not as much money to be made nowadays because so many people have done it already that, you know, it's already passé. But at the time when he did it, it was considered to be, you know, it was considered to be something that the left really could exploit. And that's basically why he did it. He's a complete fraud and a phony and a disgrace. Anyway, thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And now we go to the fantastic leftists destroy the West, who writes, and I quote, "Should righteous Europeans build a defense league that is anti-socialist, anti-immigration, and pro-Israel? Would you support such an organization?" Unquote. Yes, they should build it, and I certainly would support an organization like that. Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only Europeans, people all over the world should have organizations like that. People all over the world. Righteous Gentiles should have organizations to wake people up and to promote the truth and stand for the truth. Absolutely. Europeans as well as people in other countries. Absolutely. Anyway, thank you, Leftists Destroy the West. And now we go to Abin. We missed you, Abin. Abin writes, and I quote, "Hi, Chaim. Why was Ed Koch a bad Jew and a bad mayor? Thanks and God bless." Unquote. Okay, great question, Abin. Ed Koch was always a traitor, always a self-hating Jew. Again, I don't know what his reason, maybe because he was a homosexual, which he was. You know, he moved to Greenwich Village and he had relations with all types of people. Even when he was mayor, he was having relations with some of his commissioners in his administration. I mean, he was a notorious homosexual. Maybe because of that. Maybe he hated Judaism because Judaism does not sanction homosexual perversion. Maybe that's what turned him against the Jewish faith. But he was always an evil, rotten, self-hating Jew and a complete opportunist, a complete whore without any principles. To give you a couple of illustrations, when Jonathan Pollard was facing sentencing, Jonathan Pollard, who passed information to Israel that the United States was required to give to Israel under treaty, and the United States did not because of the Jew-hater Caspar Weinberger, Yimach Shmo, and other Jew-haters in the administration, did not give Israel the information. So Pollard saw that there was a danger to Israel, so he passed the information to Israel. And so he was charged with espionage. He went before a black Jew-hating judge named Robinson, Yimach Shmo v'zichro, who fortunately is now burning in a hot fire. Thank God, God took this animal from us. But he went before this black Jew-hating judge. And before the sentencing, guess who wrote a letter to the Jew-hating black judge against Pollard? Edwina Koch. Edwina Koch wrote the Jew-hating black judge urging him to give Jonathan Pollard the maximum possible penalty, which the Jew-hating black judge did do. He gave him life with recommendation against parole. So that was the maximum sentence he could give him, and he did give him the maximum sentence. But Edwina Koch, the Jewish mayor of the biggest city in the country, wrote a letter to this black judge and said, "Give it to this Jew. Give it to him. Give him the maximum penalty," which is the ultimate. There is no treason worse than that in Judaism. To do that to a Jew who did things to help the Jewish people and is facing the destruction of his whole life, to commit a crime like that is the worst thing any Jew could do. This is what we pray. We pray for the destruction of informers like this three times a day. Edwina Koch did the same thing to me. He wrote to my self-hating Jewish judge and urged my self-hating Jewish judge to give me the maximum penalty. So he had a habit of doing this. Whenever there were Jews who did something to help the Jewish people, he would immediately write to the judge and say, "Give him the maximum penalty." That's the type of animal Edwina Koch was. He also compared our great Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, to Adolf Hitler, Lahabdil Belef Alfei Havdalot, which means we have to make a separation, tens of thousands of times over, a separation between that evil concept and the righteous, magnificent, holy rabbi of ours. This is what Ed Koch was all about. He was a traitor. He was evil. He supported the creation of a so-called Palestine state and Israeli national suicide. He condemned Israeli settlements. He would say, I'm pro-Israel, but Israel is wrong. You have to condemn Israel when Israel is wrong. And that's how he used to speak, by the way. He literally spoke like that. And how anybody could vote for somebody. I mean, just his voice and the way he presented himself. And Jews, so many Jews loved him. They thought he was such a great person. You ask why he was a bad mayor. New York City had the record high murder rate and crime rate in the city's history when Koch was mayor. Under David Dinkins, his successor, his black, anti-white, anti-Jewish successor, you also had a very high murder rate, very high crime rate, but it actually was lower than under Koch. Under Koch, things had deteriorated to the worst point in the city's history. People don't know this, but it's true. Koch also had a lot of breaks. Ronald Reagan was president during most of the time when Koch was mayor. During most of the time he was mayor, Reagan was president. For 8 years of him being mayor, Reagan was president. So you had a booming economy. And with a booming economy and a booming stock market in Wall Street, the city got in a lot of tax revenues. And so he took credit and said he saved the city. He didn't save the city. He did nothing. He just got a lot more tax revenues because Reagan rescued the American economy. And America had the biggest period of economic prosperity, the brightest and biggest period of economic prosperity in American history and world history when Reagan was president. And New York City especially benefited by this because of Wall Street and the tax revenues you get from Wall Street. So what did Koch do? Koch could have eliminated New York City. You know that New York City has its own income taxes in addition to New York State income taxes and federal income taxes. He could have eliminated the city income taxes. He could have made New York City an economic powerhouse. Instead of doing that, you know what he did? He raised taxes and increased spending and doubled and tripled the city budget. Massive increases in spending. Massive tax increases. He destroyed the city when he did that. He destroyed. Now the city still exists, but the city is just a shadow of its former self because of Koch. The 12 years he was mayor were devastating for the city. He would talk tough and claim that he's doing certain things, but it was all a bluff. He was terrible for the city. Terrible. Anyway, thank you, Aben. I hope that answers the question. And now we go to the fantastic Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, Hi, Chaim. Do you think Ed Koch needs central heating now, unquote? He's got central heating. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The problem is he has no air conditioning where he is. That's one of the services that aren't provided where he is. That's one of his problems. So he's going to have a hard time saying, he always used to say, How am I doing? He's going to have a hard time. I don't think he's saying that right now. I think right now he's just saying, ouch. And now Gimatria writes, and I quote, Also, how evil is Turkey's Erdogan? Did he sponsor this attack? Unquote. Okay, Gimatria is referring to the attack on the American embassy in Istanbul, Turkey, where a guard was killed and there was a Muslim suicide bomber. I don't think he sponsored the attack, but I do think that his anti-Americanism and his anti-Semitism and his anti-Western Islamic pronouncements incite and encourage these attacks. I think that because of the atmosphere he's created in Turkey, that this is why we had this attack. Anyway, thank you, Gimatria. And now we go to... Excuse me, I swallowed something wrong before I came on the program. I just swallowed something wrong, and it's just, it's nothing. I mean, it's just that I just swallowed something wrong. It's no big deal, but you know how it is. It remains, you have this little cough for a while sometimes after you swallow something wrong. And now we go to Kantanka. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Kantanka writes, and I quote, Why did God make the donkey speak to the man who was trying to curse Israel? If God is protecting his people, curses should not work, so why intervene? Unquote. Okay. Interesting question. What Kantanka is referring to is when Bilam, who was the evil prophet of the enemies of Israel, when he was riding a donkey, because he was on his way to try to curse Israel, the donkey spoke to him. The donkey saw an angel with a sword, and so the donkey wouldn't, the donkey was afraid, the donkey didn't want to keep moving, didn't want to keep walking. Bilam did not see the angel with the sword, and so Bilam didn't understand why the donkey stopped, and so he got mad, and so he hit the donkey. So the donkey spoke to him and said, "Why are you hitting me?" That's the story in the Bible. Now, of course, these stories all have much greater meaning. Harambam, Maimonides, explains to us that this is prophecy. In other words, this was in a dream. All of this was a dream with symbolism. Bilam is dreaming this. He's dreaming that he's walking, that he's riding the donkey, and he's dreaming that the donkey sees an angel, and he doesn't see the angel, and he hits the donkey, and then the donkey speaks to him and rebukes him. This is in a dream. You see, if we don't read the Bible without the rabbinic commentary, if we read the Bible without the rabbinic commentary, we have a problem. You know, you've got to read the Bible with an understanding of what's being said there. Now, it's true that Haramban, you have Harambam with a mem at the end, and you have Haramban with a nun at the end. Haramban disagrees with Harambam. Haramban, who lived after Harambam, who came after him, disagrees and thinks that this really happened and that Hashem really changed the laws of nature in order to teach a lesson to Bilam. Now, first of all, why did the enemies of Israel, Bilam was their prophet, why did God give tremendous real prophetic power to the enemies of Israel at the same time that he gave tremendous prophetic power to Moshe Rabbeinu, to Moses? Why would he do this? Because God did not want the nations that were against Israel to be able to say, "Oh, what do you expect? The Jews had Moses. Moses gave them the Torah, and they had Moses, and they had a great prophet. So of course they're going to turn to God." In other words, on Judgment Day, they would have had the excuse of saying, "We didn't have a Moses. We didn't have this prophecy. We didn't have a chance to turn to God. You didn't give us a prophet like this." So God gave them a prophet who was a powerful prophet with tremendous prophetic power on the same level as Moses. His prophetic power was actually on the same level as the prophetic power of Moses, so that they would have no excuse. So that they would, out of their own free will, they would be able to choose between good and evil. And if they chose evil, there'd be no excuse on Judgment Day. That's why God created this evil prophet, Bilam. And the prophet himself was evil. Now, you ask, if God is protecting his people, curses should not work, so why intervene? God allowed Bilam to curse the Jewish people, supposedly. But he turned the curse into a blessing. He accepted it and said, "This is true," and he turned it into a blessing. He turned the curse into a blessing. He allowed what Bilam said about the Jewish people to be true. What did Bilam say? Bilam said, "Am levadad yishkon. Lo, this is a people that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations." That's what Bilam said, that the Jews would be isolated and hated by the nations and not reckoned among the nations. That was the curse, that the Jews are going to be isolated, they're going to be hated, the UN is going to condemn them, everybody's going to be against them, they're going to be Holocaust and Inquisitions, and everybody's going to be against them, and they're not going to be recognized among the nations. And when they have a Jewish state, everybody's going to be against the Jewish state. And the UN, 60 or 70% of the resolutions passed in the UN General Assembly are going to be against this one tiny little Jewish state, which is what has happened. 60 or 70% of the resolutions in the UN General Assembly are against little Israel. So all of that came true. The Jews are hated, despised, isolated. Tiny little Israel's isolated. But God took what was supposed to be a curse, because Bilam was a Jew hater. God turned that into Israel's greatest blessing. It's actually a blessing for the Jewish people when they're alone. When they're isolated and when they don't depend upon the other nations, that is a blessing. In 1967, when the Jews ignored pressure from the United States and France and Europe and the Soviet Union and the whole world not to strike first in order to, the Arabs had massed on Israel's borders, all the Arab armies, and they said, we're going to push the Jews into the sea. And tiny little Israel was facing the possibility of extermination, and Israel was in the pre-1967 borders that were only 6 to 10 miles wide. So Israel was literally facing the prospect of a Holocaust. And the United States, Lyndon Johnson, the United States, pressured Israel not to strike first. They warned Israel not to strike first. France and Charles de Gaulle said, if you strike first, we're going to cut off all aid to Israel. And they did. They before France was selling weapons to Israel, they stopped that because of Israel striking first in 1967. That was the excuse. It was actually because of Arab oil, because they wanted Arab oil. But they used that as the excuse. So they came under pressure from the United States and France, who were selling them weapons. They came under, the Soviets threatened to intervene militarily if Israel struck first. Israel ignored all the threats, ignored everybody, and struck. And in 6 days, Israel quadrupled in size. In 6 days, the tiny Jewish state liberated the entire Sinai, Judea, Samaria, Gaza, the Golan Heights, and Jerusalem. Israel was four times her original size after only 6 days of war. The Jews were outnumbered 100 to 1. And their country was four times as big as it had been only 6 days earlier, when they were outnumbered 100 to 1 in a war? I mean, this is a miracle as great as any of the miracles in the Bible. And when it happened in our own time in 1967. That's when Israel was alone. Lo, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. It's a blessing. Why? Because when Israel doesn't get foreign aid and doesn't get weapons and the world is against Israel and Israel still wins tremendous victories, then there's no excuse. Then they can't say you won because of American foreign aid, or you won because the world is supporting you, or you won because you had the backing of public opinion. No excuses. Israel was all alone, isolated by herself, outnumbered hopelessly, and in 6 days quadruples in size. That is Kiddush Hashem, that's sanctifying God's name. That is when you prove to the world that there's a God. But if Israel depends upon the nations of the world and says, we don't really believe in God, we believe in Obama, we believe in America, we believe in Europe, we believe in this country or that country or this ally or that ally, we're going to lean on them and we're going to listen to their pressure and we're going to listen to what they tell us to do. In a situation like that, Israel loses. That's a curse. In the war in Lebanon, when Israel was just trying to wipe out one terrorist organization, one ragtag terrorist organization called Hezbollah, Israel lost that war. Israel was unable to defeat Hezbollah. This is the same Israel that defeated the whole Arab world. And all of a sudden they can't defeat one terrorist organization, Hezbollah, in Lebanon in 2006. Not only that, the whole world supported Israel in Lebanon. This time the world supported Israel. The Bush administration, the United States, issued statements saying that they support Israel. What Israel's doing is justified. They're defending themselves. Even Europe, even the European Union, supported Israel in Lebanon and said that it was self-defense, what Israel was doing. So the world was Israel had a lot of support and allies and was depending upon allies and support and lost the war. A war that Israel should easily have won. So wars that Israel should easily win, she cannot win when she depends upon the nations of the world. But wars that Israel, that seem hopeless, Israel does win miraculously when she does not depend upon the nations of the world. When she goes by what Bil'am said, Lo, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. Am levadad yishkon, it says in the Bible. A nation that shall dwell alone. When that happens, that's a reason for us to be joyful. And by the way, of course, there are righteous Gentiles in every country that support Israel, but the governments of the world do not support Israel and will not support Israel. There are righteous Gentiles, individuals that support Israel, and they'll be blessed for that. But governments will not, and Israel must not be dependent upon governments of the world. Anyway, I hope I answered your question. And now we go to the great British Sword, who writes, and I quote, please use my festering country as an example of a burgeoning police state and warn the Yanks what could be in store for them, unquote. British Sword, as usual, what you say is absolutely correct. Unfortunately, Britain, it's first of all, it's a socialist country, and it's a country that's opening its doors to massive third world immigration, and it's a country that has become super politically correct. It's a country that is losing all sense of morals. So you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely right, British Sword. And that is the same direction that America is going in as well under Barack Hussein Obama. No question about it. You're absolutely right. Anyway, thank you, British Sword. And now we go to our friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, please rank the following: Ed Koch, Michael Bloomberg, and Rahm Emanuel," unquote. I give them all the worst rank you could give all three of these self-hating Jews. Koch, I already spoke about. I spoke about him earlier in the program. Michael Bloomberg, this is a guy who's worth $20 billion. He's the richest person in New York State. And he uses all of his money and all of his power to do evil, supporting Obama for re-election, raising taxes in New York City and increasing spending, promoting evil, promoting gay marriage and abortion and confiscation of guns and every terrible policy, affirmative action, every evil policy under the sun, this hideous, vicious piece of garbage supports. That's Michael Bloomberg, yimach shmo. Rahm Emanuel, well, we know that he, of course, is the ultimate self-hating Jew. He was when he was in Congress, and when he was chief of staff for Barack Hussein Osama, his boss, and now as mayor of Chicago, he is the ultimate example of a self-hating Jew as well. Same story. This is a guy who devoted himself to promoting Bill Clinton, who was trying to destroy Israel, and now Barack Hussein Obama, who's trying to destroy Israel. And now in Chicago, look what he's doing. Look at Chicago's murder rate. Look at Chicago's crime rate. Look at what's happening in Chicago. Look at what the results are of his horrific policies of appeasing the most evil people. So I give them all the lowest rank possible, Chicago Jew. Anyway, thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to our other great friend, Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what are your thoughts on the New York City mayoral race of 2013 and the future of New York City," unquote. I don't think New York City has a very bright future at all, Maimonides. I think New York City is in very bad shape. It's a leftist Bolshevik city. And I think that, the front runner for the Democrat nomination in New York City, New York City is 80% Democrat. The front runner is Christine Quinn, who wants to continue the terrible policies of Michael Bloomberg. She, by the way, is an open lesbian who is married, quote unquote, to another woman. Can you imagine? I mean, that will bring God's curses upon New York City. The biggest city in America is going to have as their mayor a lesbian who is married, quote unquote, to another woman. She represents utter immorality and evil. Of course, she's friends with the labor unions and all the politically correct filth that have destroyed the city and that punish good people, people that try to earn things and create businesses and entrepreneurs. New York City punishes them and fights them and taxes them and creates massive paperwork and bureaucracies to smother them. But if you're a lazy bum, you get everything under the sun from New York City. That's Christine Quinn and all the other people running for mayor, unfortunately. Now, on the Republican side, you have the former chairman of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, Joseph LaHorta, who was friendly with Rudy Giuliani, and Rudy Giuliani supporting him. He's running. I don't know much about him. I don't know if he'd be good. I know Giuliani, relatively speaking, was a better mayor than the other mayors we've had. So if Joseph LaHorta would be like that, and he would do something positive in terms of taxes and spending, that would be an improvement. But I don't know enough about him yet to say. He's running for the Republican nomination for mayor. Anyway, and I do think we should, and JTF, we should keep people updated on the race for mayor. Race for mayor is this November, and we're going to keep people updated on that, God willing. And we'll let people know what we think as the campaign moves forward. Thank you, Maimonides. And I want to thank all of our great JTFers for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.